Hi, my name is Michelle Gaynor, and I am a senior undergraduate at the University of Central Florida. This project, which I began my freshman year, looks at the genetic diversity within natural and restored populations of Spartina altiflora to ensure effective restoration efforts. Restoration aims to restore human-disturbed ecosystems and enhance biodiversity and ecosystem services. An example of this on the left is oyster restoration, where bleached oyster populations which have died off are being replaced with oyster mats that will be used to recruit new populations. On the right, on the other hand, they are replacing invasive species with natural to increase the biodiversity in that site. When measuring the success of restoration efforts, you can first look at the short term and quantify either percent coverage or percent recruitment. In this example, oyster mats on the left is the original right after restoration, and then on the right is 7 months later when it's completely covered. This is a very successful short-term restoration effort. But when looking at the long term, it's important to consider the genetic diversity of your population, because a population with high levels of genetic diversity will be able to adapt and maintain over time the population size. For example, if disease entered this population that you see, in selected against the blue phenotype, a population with high levels of genetic diversity will have lots of genotypes left that will be able to adapt and maintain this population, while a population with low levels of genetic diversity will be less vulnerable. So, in order to begin a restoration effort, most of the time when you plan to bring an organism into a new ecosystem, you have to consider the genetic diversity. These organisms are normally from naturally occurring populations, and then they are transplanted into these new sites. So something to keep in mind when designing your source is the mode of reproduction. So if a species is reproducing clonally through rhizome runners, it's often hard to distinguish individuals, and you could collect multiple of one individual and have low genetic diversity. If a species reproduces asexually, you want to ensure high levels of genetic diversity initially because of low rates of recombination. It's also important to consider if your species is locally adapted. If it's locally adapted, you want to make sure that it will survive in the new environment if it differs from its original source. So multiple populations should be sampled in order to create the source population. My project focuses on the Indian River Lagoon, which is located on the east coast of Florida, and it's the most biodiverse estuary system in North America, meaning it's a conservation priority and a restoration focus. It's home to about 14 federally listed as endangered or threatened species, including the Florida manatee, the Florida panther, and the Florida scrub jay. Along with being home to all of this biodiversity, the Indian River Lagoon is often a place of recreation, and boat wakes have degraded the shoreline. In addition, agriculture is very common around this area, and runoff has caused algae blooms to be very detrimental to this area. One way to combat shoreline loss is the living shoreline, which is made of mangrove, smooth cordgrass, and oyster mats. It has the ability to dampen boat wakes and hold the shoreline in place. It is a replacement for the traditional concrete wall that has often been used for restoration efforts. In addition, it also can withstand hurricanes like our recent Hurricane Irma. In the living shoreline, I focus on Spartina altiflora, which is a smooth cordgrass and is native to Florida. It's an ecosystem engineer with extensive rooting capabilities that are able to hold on to the shoreline. It reproduces clonally through rhizome runners, and it only reproduces asexually the majority of the time. It's also a hexaploid species, meaning it has 6 copies of its genome, and this normally is associated with high levels of genetic diversity. For our restoration efforts, individuals are selected from the IRL, transplanted to a greenhouse-like setting in little kiddie pools, and it's grown for about 1 to 6 months prior to being transplanted back into the IRL to aid restoration efforts. Other restoration efforts use nursery stock instead of growing from populations that were sourced in the IRL. Our objective is to evaluate these restoration efforts on the genetic diversity of the smooth cordgrass within the IRL, and to test our And we hypothesize that there's two extremes associated with picking from a source population. You can have high levels of genetic diversity, which you see on the top, or low levels of genetic diversity. Once transplanted into the restored site, you would see, again, those levels of genetic diversity. And we expect within our sites that we'll see low levels of genetic diversity due to the clonal nature of Sclerotinia altiflora and the need to walk at least 10 meters from your last shoot to identify that this new plant is a different individual than the previous. Also, we know that our restoration efforts only selected from one population, and they were propagated in the greenhouse prior to being transplanted into the restored site. In order to test our hypothesis, we sampled from greenhouse populations because we wanted to understand if relaxed selective pressures, which are in the greenhouse, are leading to genotypes that are more successful in that greenhouse setting and then die off while transplanted into the natural. Then within the IRL on the Canaveral National Seashore, in the Mosquito Lagoon, we sampled four natural populations that are distributed throughout the lagoon and five restored populations. Of these restored sites, they were initiated at different times from 2011 to 2015. Percent coverage, which is actually percent retained from the restoration efforts, varied. But one thing that should be noted is Castle Windy. In 2015, the site was initiated, but only 35% of that population remains due to a disturbance right after planting. So in order to test and to sample these populations, of those 10 populations, we took 35 individuals at each site for a total of 350 species. DNA was extracted using a seropositive extraction protocol, which I optimized from an animal protocol that traditionally is called Ampurex. Then we used 12 diplomized microsatellite markers, and then we genotyped these at the University of Arizona Genetic Core. So what have we found so far? The six loci that have been amplified and genotyped for 7 of the 10 populations, including 3 natural and 4 restored. All natural populations are in Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium, while 2 of the 4 restored populations are out of Hardy-Weinberg for at least 3 or more loci. Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium assumes the perfect population, and deviations could be caused by things like inbreeding, genetic drift, bottleneck, or founder's effect. One thing that should be noted is Castle Windy, which had that disturbance right after its initiation, is also out of Hardy-Weinberg, and this could be to that bottleneck that caused a big die-off in the population. Next, we looked at gene diversity, number of alleles, and allelic richness. And when we tested this with a two-way ANOVA, looking at each population at each loci, we found no significant difference between the natural and restored sites. Next, we looked at FST, which is a value that looks at population differentiation, and it ranges between 0 and 1. 0 means that it's not genetically different, but anything that's bolded and starred is genetically differentiated between moderate to great levels. If you can tell, all the white is the comparison between the restored and natural populations, and all but one is starred and bolded, meaning that these natural populations and restored populations are genetically differentiated. So, to summarize, gene diversity, number of allele, and allelic richness is not significantly different between restored and natural populations. However, restored populations are genetically different from the natural populations, and this could be caused by sampling only from one site, which caused such a difference between the restored and natural populations. In order to continue to investigate this dynamic and finish understanding how these restoration efforts are affecting the diversity, we need to finish genotyping the remainder loci for all populations, and we want to genotype that greenhouse population in order to understand if the relaxed selective pressure plays a role in the dynamic we are seeing. If we continue to see this, additional individuals should be added to the restored sites from other locations than originally used. Any questions?
So I live in Florida, and the biggest factor going on in this state is water. Water level changes in the ecosystems, water quality. How is that relevant to what you're trying to do? You're trying to separate populations in a very difficult environment that's changing very rapidly.
So these populations are used to aid the shoreline stabilization. So as water rises, it's not degrading the shoreline and actually doesn't rise in this location as dramatically. What we are doing is understanding if that effort itself is going to be maintained. So as we continue to have changes in our water quality and in our level of water, we want to understand if this effort itself is worth the money being spent on it and worth the time. So we want to ensure that this is going to continue over time, no matter the changes. So we are not currently doing that. Since we piggybacked on after restoration, we can only look at the continuous changes. However, depending on what we find, that will be our next step. People are also looking at the dynamic of this system altogether and looking at the oyster genetics along with the mangrove genetics, along with different ecological factors that are contributed to their success.